So I'm sitting outside a supermarket in Bushwick, Brooklyn, or as I like to call it, Shitville of Fucktown. This is a fucking ridiculous neighborhood, man. Fucking a little rough. Just looking after Ayn's bike. She's in there buying some stuff. Like, for instance, there's just a dude sitting on a shopping cart that's on its side. Just sitting there, just hanging out outside the grocery store. I guess he's got nothing better to do, nowhere else to go. And some guy brought him a piece of cake. If anyone wants this cake, it's too sweet. Weird neighborhood. A lot of fried chicken in this neighborhood. Just saying, coincidentally. I had a piece yesterday in Queens, like Crown fried chicken, like the lowest of the low. And I can still like feel it. It's like in my system. It's brutal. All right, so I'm gonna do some ham radio. Got no specific theme going on today, just built up some songs that I like. So let's see what we got. Well, first off, I just got back from the Keith and the Girl cruise, which was extremely fucking great and awesome, and I'm really glad Keith and him have brought me along. Filmed all kinds of stuff. It's going to be such a good DVD. So awesome. I was kind of thinking of doing the play-by-play, but really all that stuff will come out when the DVD comes out. But I did have one day in particular that was a pretty strong memory. Oh, there's Ayn. I'll get back to this. I just sent Ayn off. She's going to a barbecue that I didn't want to go to. So it's just me and you, internet. So I just stopped in Dunkin' Donuts, and man, I know criticizing New York is like fucking shooting fish in a barrel, but how did you guys get saddled with so many goddamn Dunkin' Donuts, man? Place is fucking horrible. Really makes me miss Tim Hortons. Everybody says Krispy Kreme's not so bad, but those are hard to find around here. Like, I don't know, the Dunkin' Donuts coffee's alright. I have a hard time telling. I don't know, when I have good coffee, I can tell. I'm like, wow, that was a good coffee. But bad coffee has to be pretty goddamn bad before I really notice. But yeah, like, man, get like a Boston cream from Dunkin' Donuts compared to, like, fucking Tim Hortons, man. Holy shit, like, it's awful. I remember one time, me and Relic were driving around. Where were we going? I don't even remember now. We got so lost, though. I remember the time we tried to get to Dinosaur Barbecue. Holy fuck. That was the beginning. It was fun hanging out with him. I like hanging out with Relic. That guy's really cool, but I don't know, that was the beginning of feeling my mood turn. I remember when we finally got to Dinosaur Barbecue, it was like, alright, so we're at Dinosaur Barbecue, but there's no way this is fucking... I'm by a train, by the way. Traded in my airplanes for trains. You know, there's no way this is going to be enough fun to justify how hard it was to get there. I guess we should have just taken the subway, but we drove. So I don't know if this was that same day or some other day, but we ended up going the wrong way. Across, like, a $10 toll. Now, how does that even make sense? I mean, I've seen tolls before where, you know, they're a little tiny bit of money. Throw a few quarters in there. $10. And we ended up having to come back across it also. So, there was a Dunkin' Donuts on the other side. It was really late at night. It was the only thing open. So it was like, well, shit, if we're paying all these tolls, let's at least get some donuts. Worst goddamn donuts ever, man. Just the worst. Terrible. Anyway, today I got a Reese Peanut Butter Cup cookie, which is like a chocolate chunk cookie that they literally took like some of those mini Reese Peanut Butter Cups and mashed them on top. It's actually pretty tasty. But that's not a very dignified presentation, nor a very clever fucking product. So yeah, this is kind of like the trade-off. Ayn's place is, it's pretty big. It's probably about the same size as me and Relic's. And I think the rent's about the same, except there's three of them there, so it's cheaper. It's much more central. I mean, it's in Brooklyn right by a train. Obviously, where me and Relic live, it's fucking way out in the middle of Queens, man. It's like in the middle of nowhere, but this neighborhood, man, what a kick in the balls. Our neighborhood is way nicer. nicer. Like, way, way. Yesterday, I was just sort of walking around this neighborhood a little bit. Took, like, an alternate route on the way to our house. And I remember when I first shaved my head, I had, like, a Relic gave me, like, a silly mohawk thing for a while that I didn't keep for very long. But then he got one, and his is awesome, man. His is so cool. Although he's often, not often, but occasionally mistaken for a white power fella because of it. But now after my little mohawk thing got old, I just shaved it all the way down, big to my head, and I didn't think twice about it, because, like, the skinheads of Canada, I don't know, not really. Who are we racist against? It's just a bunch of frozen white people. But Ayn was a little, like, put off a little, like, you can't really do that around here, you know? And now I know what she means, man. In this neighborhood especially. I must have looked quite awkward. Skinny, bald, white boy. Has certain connotations. Anyway, yeah, you got lots of garbage everywhere, big fences, barbed wire, children's party supplies behind the barbed wire. Kind of a fucked up place. So, there's trade-offs is what I'm saying. I do live far too far away. But I don't know if I would trade. Maybe I would. Being close is nice. Anyway, I'm rambling. I was talking about the cruise. Maybe I'll dig up my cruise notes and see if they got anything else that I really want to mention. But basically, really good time, man. Really good time. Going into it, I mean, I wasn't going to go. I was like, you know, just more Keith and the girl stuff. One of those things that I'm going to miss a lot when I'm gone from New York, but I've started to take for granted now that I've been here 6 or 7 months. But man, everybody was so cool. Everybody was so fun to hang out with. Especially the day we were in Mexico. I was just, I don't know, man. I was so disorganized that whole trip. I hardly brought any fucking clothes or supplies or anything, and I never knew what anybody was doing or what any of the itineraries were. And it was my roommate, Russell. He's Griffin on the Keith and the Girl forums. I was just kind of lazing around on Mexico Day, like, I don't know, maybe I'll go to Mexico, maybe I'll stay in the boat, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And he was the one who finally was like, dude, come on, you're in Mexico, for God's sake, go do something. And I'm glad he did, because it turned out really well. It was like me and him. And a bunch of people. There was like 11 or 12 of us, but two of the Brumsky brothers and Iron Man Bobby and a bunch of us, we went out on this glass bottom boat. I went like snorkeling, and I didn't even get in the water. I was just the filming guy. I was just trying really hard not to let Keith and Emda's camera get waterlogged and destroyed, but I don't know, man. It was my favorite day. It was so fun. We had this, like, horrible Mexican beer, and we were making fake commercials for it, and just how fucking god-awful it is. And they were swimming, like, underneath the boat and just doing all kinds of great stuff. And it was just so fun. It was excellent. It really made me think I gotta get more friends that are, like, outdoors types, you know? Because that is, like, the ultimate example of, like, in general, I've found my personality type tends to be, if, I don't know, if an uncomfortable situation comes up, some people default to yes, some people default to no. Some people go for it, some people don't. I generally don't. Generally, I'm the guy that'll just back off and say, nah, no way. And in a lot of ways, that's served me well. There's a lot of fucking pitfalls in the world that I've avoided because of that. But there's a lot of stuff that there is no reason to avoid, you know? There's, like, positive risk and negative risk, or, like, smart risk and dumb risk. And, man, that outdoorsy type shit, that's just smart risk. That stuff is just fun. It's not like going to a club and doing drugs and fucking getting drunk and, you know, potentially dangerous, dumb shit. It's just fun. It's just good times. And I really think I could use more of that kind of influence in my life. So, yeah, that day was really fun. In fact, what song can I fucking play to symbolize that? I'm gonna play fucking, let's play the Seven Deadly Sins. Or Tobacco Island, one of those. Flying a Molly song. Some nautical theme shit. So here to symbolize the fucking fun I had in Mexico, out on the open seas. Here's some pirate music. Sail away on a ball and chain, it keeps us from the roaring waves. Get her on the boat, but forever we'll be free. So sail away, a border
think the moon is full, and so are we. Seven drunken pirates, we're the seven deadly sins. Yeah. Sonny gives off by a satellite and left us up unreeling. Johnny Storm is standing on left by secure ceiling. What became of rebels? Is set by you and me? They're up and with their demons in the search for liberty. I'll suffer as you suffer all can swim up on the desert. Avarice is ravaged all in spite of good intention. Don't get out with gluttony for pride or Johnny swell. But none's unforgiven in the four corners of hell. So set away on a ball and chain, kick from the runaways. Get her on the void and put forever. Sail away up all the rig, I'm known as fallen soul away. Seven drunken pirates, we're the seven deadly sins. Sail away on a bomb and chain, kings from the runaways. Get on the fire, but forever let me free. Sail away up all the rig, I'm known as fallen soul away. Seven drunken pirates, we're the seven deadly sins. Seven drunken pirates, we're the seven deadly sins. Seven drunken pirates, we're the seven deadly sins. Out to hell we must sail, for the shore sweet Barbados, where the sugar cane goes falling. God, we won't believe it. The butcher and his crown break the land we used to sleep in. Now tomorrow chimes and ghostly cries for hot tobacco oil and
agony. Will you cleanse this misery? For it's never again I'll breathe the air of home. From the sandy edge, the rolling sea breaks my revenge. With each whisper, a thousand ways.
Accepting only fresh brine, you can get another try.
So that was a nice pirate medley I ended up putting together. It's kind of weird because I always film these, I mean record these on this little DV cam I've had for like a couple of years that just keeps falling apart worse and worse. And it broke one more step on the cruise where now I can't close the shutter over the lens, which I think is going to degrade this thing incredibly fast once the lens starts getting scratched and stuff. Then I really will have to buy a new camera, which has been my plan all along, is just to let this thing bust. But it's weird because I would always just leave the lens closed. Man, this fucking neighborhood. I don't know what the fuck is going on around here, but there's so much noise. I got woken up so many times last night. Goddamn sirens going by, and there's like construction going on the train. So every time a train goes by, they honk their goddamn horn. And it's just like the worst, man. I need some earplugs or something. Anyway, since my lens cap thing is broken, I would usually just leave it closed so these ham radios are just black. But now I've got like gonna have an hour-long video of my own chin, which I will of course excise and throw away, but it's gonna be weird. So yeah, the other thing I wanted to, the other memory on that cruise ship was the very last day. I gave all of my cameras and stuff to Keith and Hemda because I knew I was gonna have to deal with customs and I didn't want any funny business. I definitely didn't want any evidence that made it look like I was there to work, because I'm not allowed to work under my visa. So I gave them all my stuff. All I had was my little book bag with some clothes. And it was already like 5 in the morning. We were docking at 8. So, because we all hung out in Keith and Hemda's room. Had like a final night party, which that was another cool thing too. You know, I've just kind of, again, sort of taken it for granted that I just get to hang out with Keith and Hemda a lot. Although there was one part in the cruise, like second day maybe, third day, I don't know. But we were all sitting at the dinner table, and I looked over and, you know, Keith and Hemda are sitting there, and it just suddenly struck me. It's like, it brought me back all of a sudden to back in Vancouver, back when I first found that show and really just fell in love with how awesome that show is. And I was like, Jesus, I'm just, here I am, I'm sitting with them. There they are. They're right there. It was cool to kind of get that, it was cool to get that perspective back again and just remember. They're not just the guys down the street. Like, that's Keith and fucking Hemda. Like, it's amazing what they pulled off. They are, like, fucking celebrities and they deserve to be, like, their little empire. It's so fucking cool. So impressive to me what they have done. But I forget sometimes that, you know, I forget that old perspective. And I got reminded a lot on that last day of the cruise when there was a bunch of us just hanging out in Keith and Emda's room. That afterward, when people are posting on the forums and posting pictures and talking about the cruise, that was a day that a lot of people brought up as like their favorite day of the cruise, that just getting to hang out. You know, just getting to be there in the inner circle. And it's true. It's like, I remember the first year I was in New York, the first time I opened for Keith, we all went to Nice Guy Eddie's the night I got there, and it was just, it was me, Keith and Hemda, Patrice, Matt, and Spooky, and we all just hung out and had dinner, and like how great that was. I was like starstruck. I barely even talked. So yeah, I thought that was cool. I forgot a little bit what that's like. But that day, so it was like 5 in the morning, there was really no point in going to bed. And I wanted to be up and out as fast as I could because I knew I'd have to deal with custom shit. And so the sun was just starting to come up. Like the boat was really quiet and empty, hardly anybody around. And you could see Miami, like, on the horizon, just starting to show up on the one side. And then behind us, it was totally just open ocean. And just with the sun just coming up, it just looked so beautiful. And the sea was so calm, and it was just so great. And I was listening to this, I was listening to just random MP3s. But this one song is the song Swing Set Chain by Loquat that Brad played a few shows ago. That he plays songs once in a while that really stick with me, like Use It by the New Pornographers and Half a Week Before the Winter by Vanessa Carlton, and that one, Swing Set Chain, where he plays these songs on the show that just get totally stuck in my brain, that I just become obsessed over. And just the vibe of it was really cool for that time of day and that setting. And there's a few little specific lyrics. Like, really, a song has to catch me musically, and then the lyrics come second, and then I, you know, see if those are cool, if they have some kind of meaning. But I was thinking a lot about Ayn, because if I had gotten booted back out of the States, if I had to go back to Canada, that's what I would miss most, is her. That would have been the disaster of it. And there's these lines in the song of, like, I'm kind of afraid I'm becoming codependent on you, that seemed extremely apt at the time. But since I go out of my way not to play the same song twice, at least not the same version of a song, I dug up an older version of this song from an EP that they put out before their album. I don't really know the other songs by this band yet. This is the only one I know, but it's a very, very beautiful song. So this is Swing Set Chain by Loquat, the EP version. More piano, but really good. So just imagine being on a boat. Oh, and then soon after this, I fell asleep on a deck chair on the upper deck. And by the time I woke up, we had docked in Miami, but that was nice too. Just a nice, serene day.
Chain that stuck with
a song I just kind of randomly remembered about. Now that the internet is a little more pervasive, I can finally track it down. It's that remake of Dawn of the Dead that came out in 2004, I guess. There's this really cool song that played while they're souping up their van to make their big escape. And overall, I thought that was a pretty good remake. The original Dawn of the Dead is still my favorite zombie movie ever. And the remake wasn't bad, except the part where the dopey animal-loving girl's dog runs away. So she runs away to get the dog. Okay, good enough. Dumbass wants to get her dog, she's dead. That's fine. But then everybody decides that they have to go save dumbass animal lover. And it just didn't make sense. That's when you feel the writer stepping in too heavy. Everybody needs to be worried about surviving. That's what they would be worried about. They would not fuck up their plans just to go save this stupid idiot who risked everybody for a fucking dog. And of course, tragedy ensues. When you get right down to it, nobody really made it through that movie. Anyway, that's the only part that bugged me. Dogs don't count, particularly in a zombie epidemic. But it was this really cool song. And I remember I looked it up at the time, where I had to ask somebody on a fucking message board or something. That's how bad I wanted to find out what this song was. And I found out it was called the Hangman Song, but that wasn't the original version. It was one they re-recorded, like, just for the movie. But I could never find either one. So the other day I got that in my head and looked around, and I found them both. The movie one is really short. It's only like a minute long. It's only the little bit they play in the movie. Like, that's it. And it's the better of the two. But let's play those. The original and the rocked up version of the Hangman Song.
We will all be standing in a row. Fires of death chewing at our shoes. And we'll all be wearing navy blue. All our earthly goods will also lose. Oh, oh, woe is me. The state. Will turn us all into dust, and we will be judged one last time. You, your son, and me. Oh,
was at the supermarket, watching people cut in line. I started thinking about human nature. What would you do if there was no more food? My mind began to wander about greed and hunger, and just how many other countries are getting ready for another war. But the sun was shining and everything seems fine, so count me in, I'll see you on the other side. Chemical bomb, chemical bomb, eyes melt, skin explodes, everybody dead. It won't be long, it won't be long, people gonna run around losing their heads. A river of blood, who's gonna live? The earth is tired of humankind, and I think this world is gonna wash up in. Shoppers were beasts. What could I do to hide? Back in this world of humankind, I think we've already lost our minds. But the sun was shining and everything seems fine, so count me in, I'll see you on the other side. Chemical bomb, chemical bomb, eyes melt, skin explodes, everybody's dead. It won't be long, it won't be long, people gonna run around losing their heads. A river of blood, who's gonna live? The earth is tired of humankind, and I think this world is gonna wash up in.
Chemical Bomb by the Aquabats. Thought that seemed like a good song to throw in there. Similarly apocalyptic, if sillier. It was my friend Stefan back in Fredericton that hooked me up to that song. I actually saw the Aquabats open for Rancid once. See, I guess they're like generally like a ska band, but this was their one album where they kind of got weird and did different types of shit, so that's their Apocalypse Bossa Nova. Catchy as shit, though. They're weird, too. It's like, there's a shitload of them. There's like seven guys, and they all dress in these, like, weird green outfits, like they're superheroes. They're like the ska fucking Slipknot or something. Let's play something kind of downbeat. I've actually got, I got a number of downbeat songs laid out today, just coincidentally. Sometimes those are just the best songs. Doesn't necessarily mean I'm ready to hang myself. It's just they are the catchiest things I've listened to lately. Because I got like my little ham radio folder, you know, where I hear something and I'm like, oh yeah, that song. Or find a new song and toss it in there. Wait till I got enough built up to do a show. But this is like a sad song, but it reminds me of a good time. Where when I was back home for like 8 months, I was babysitting my cousin Dan's daughter, Allie, Alessandra. And it helped a lot that she was a really good kid, but I was a kick-ass babysitter, man. I was good at that shit. And I took her to the park all the time, and it was just a fun time. Dan, on the other hand, he was fucking obsessed with World of Warcraft at the time. You know, that's all he did. Just played that goddamn game all the time, but, it didn't really bother me that much because I got to hang out with this kid, and that was fun for me. But Dan had this little tiny MP3 player. It only had like 125 megs. I think it was like a Christmas present that I got, just some weird random thing my mom bought for like $10 off somebody. So, so he filled it with songs, which didn't take very long, and then he just played those same songs over and over and over and over and over and over. remember. What's that fucking Alexis on Fire song? This Could Be Anywhere? First single of the third album. That was on there. And of the two, well, there's like three singers in Alexis on Fire, but the two main guys, there's George, the screamy guy, and there's Dallas, the pretty guy, pretty singing guy. Not that he's a bad-looking gentleman, you know. And he had this solo thing called City and Color. I can never figure that out. I thought that was such a weird name because it seemed to be just him. And it was just the other day that I was looking up shit about him, and I figured, or I realized, or read that it's because his name is Dallas Green. You know, he's a city and color. And he is kind of like not sure enough about just putting his own name on shit. He wanted to come up with like a band name, even though it's just him. They had this big single, Save Your Scissors. Never really did it for me. The whole album I only listened to once or twice. It seemed kind of simplistic. But this one song, Coming Home, really was good. And Dan listened to it over and over, again and again. And I came across it again the other day, and I was like, oh yeah, that song. I like that song. I just got on the subway. This is a new one for me. I've never actually recorded while on the subway before. Because at least when I'm out in public, you know, I might be in public talking to myself, but at least I'm moving. I'm just moving past people. Get a weird look, and it's over. But this subway car is only, I think there's like 10 other people in it, and they're all at the other end. Nobody's even noticed that I'm talking to myself yet. So yeah, Coming Home, Dallas Green. This is from a live show that he did. And I like this little crowd banter I'm going to throw in, too, where I've forgotten how much... I don't know, I never really paid attention to the Canadian accent. I never really noticed it until I got here and everybody makes fun of how I say things. I guess I say sorry funny. I don't know. What else do we say funny? Well, out and about, obviously. There's other words. Apparently you don't say supper, you say dinner. I don't know, it was good enough for goddamn Jesus in his Last Supper. It's good enough for me. And pop, it's pop, it's not soda. But I don't know, those are just regional words. But I guess, you know, pronunciation-wise, sure, there's differences. Especially if you go further east, you know, Newfoundland-wise or the rest of New Brunswick, they're pretty harsh. And Ontario, too. Really? I think mine's gotten worse. When I was a kid, I'm sure I didn't have an accent. Especially like Fredericton, it's a government town and a university town. It's like a little haven of no weird accent. And I watched a lot of TV. I didn't even know we said A. I really didn't. I picked that up off TV. But now I do say it all the time. I don't know. I like it. It's a good word. And it's significantly less stupid sounding than huh. You know, H-U-H. Similar uses, but huh just makes you sound dumb, whereas A makes you sound Canadian, which may or may not equate to dumb, depending on your perspective. What the fuck was I talking about? City and Color. Yeah, so he's just doing this little banter about his glasses losing the screw. And I don't know. He's got just enough of that Canadian accent. I remember City and Color was like such a big deal in Canada. It was ridiculous. Like Alexis on Fire is the band that really toured around and pushed hard to become successful. City and Color is just this little thing that he did. But I remember Alexis on Fire was still playing the Croatian Cultural Center in Vancouver, which isn't small. That's where I saw Mindless Self-Indulgence and Rancid and stuff. But it sure ain't big. Whereas fucking Dallas Green rolls into town on the strength of that Save Your Scissors single. Sold out the fucking Malcolm Bowl. That's where, like, fucking Jack Johnson and fucking White Stripes and shit. Not White Stripes, but the Raconteurs played. White Stripes did a cool thing where they just played the Orpheum, like, 2 or 3 days in a row. I think Ween did that, too. But, yeah, it's like I can never tell sometimes if a band has made it in America or not. Because I remember at the end of Entertainment Tonight, they just play, you know, like 20 seconds of a video as they roll out their credits, and they played Save Your Scissors once. And I was like, wow, really? An American show fucking played that shit? So for all I knew, maybe it was a big radio hit in the States. Like, I heard a Joy Drop song in a bar the other day. Fucking, you know, Beautiful Like You. I'm beautiful like me. So, of course, like a fucking retard monkey, I have to say, hey, that band's from Canada. And I actually had heard that song before. And I was like, wow, really? So, I mean, I it's hard to judge sometimes, but no, apparently City in Color did not. I'm not surprised about Alexis on Fire, but even City in Color did not break the market here in the States. I don't know, it doesn't seem like it's so bad to be a Canadian phenomenon. Although your records sell like shit. Like, goddamn, the first Nickelback album sold like 50,000 copies and everyone was losing their minds because that was so awesome. Then the second one had that big single in the States and sold like 12 million fucking copies. Like, Jesus Christ. Not sure if I had a point there. Anyway, here's some melancholy Dallas Green coming home.
So, thanks very much, everybody, for joining me. Was anybody here yesterday? Okay, cool. Gonna hear most of the same songs. Sorry. Also, I'm gonna take my glasses off, because earlier I just found out that anybody who's wearing glasses will know what I'm talking about. You know when you lose a screw? So, I'm afraid that I do this thing sometimes where I hit my face on the mic by accident, and, pretty sure my lens is going to fall out, so I'm going to do this. Nobody get excited.
Up and down to Georgia, I've seen the streets in the west. I've driven down the 90. Well, hell, I've seen America's best. I've been through the Rockies. Well, I've seen Saskatoon. I've driven down the Highway 1, just hoping that I see you soon. I will just hold my tongue, 'cause I'm coming home. 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 I'm coming. Taking chances. told me life was a risk, but I just have one last question. Will it be my heart or will it be his? 'Cause I'm coming home, 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 I'm coming home. I'm coming home. I'm coming home.
Thanks, everybody.
I'm back in beautiful Queens. And if it's easy to make fun of the rough parts of Brooklyn, it's real easy to make fun of the rough parts of Queens. This is, what's it called? Sufkin Station, something? The one where you can catch the air train to JFK. Pretty big hub, pretty much a big pile of shit. Although I was here with Ayn one morning because she had to come to the courthouse. And we had breakfast at this little place. It was really good. That was actually a really nice morning. So let's talk about the Offspring for a bit. I was looking into the Offspring somewhat, because I remember way back whenever Smash came out, 94 I guess, my friend Tim introduced it to me, and I guess that was the first punk album I ever had, but I really didn't think of it as a punk album. Even like the year after that, I started getting into NoFX, and I didn't think of them as a punk band. I don't know that I really even knew what the fuck punk was. I just thought it was, they were good CDs, which they were. But it was a used record store in my hometown called Backstreet Records. The guy that works there, his name's Eric Hill. And he's kind of famous around town. A lot of people know him. I always like bumping into him when I'm home. But he was good friends with Cal, the guy that owned the comic store that I later worked at. And so me and my friend Tim started off being friends with Cal and then became friends with Eric. So he's the one that introduced Tim to this album. You see, like, Eric listens to some wacky shit, man. He has his own, like, show on CHSR that I caught a few times. He listens to shit I'd never even goddamn heard of. It's a lot of kind of, like, sound pastiches and stuff. I'm taking a shortcut, by the way. I'm probably going to get so lost. We'll see, though. But, no, I think he had us peg. We were, like, 13, 14 years old. Smash had just come out, and he's like, this is the album for these kids. They're gonna fucking love this shit. I even remember, like, I remember when Rancid's Let's Go came out, their second album. My friend Rodney bought it, and I, like, thought that was so lame. I don't know. Ruby Soho and shit, it just seemed so lame to me. I later became a big Rancid fan, but... And I guess by then... Hey, cool, a tunnel. I'm gonna go through this tunnel. Get mega wicked lost. I guess by then I must have had some idea of what fucking punk music was. Rancid didn't seem like punk to me. It seemed lame. I don't know. The point is, I was confused about punk. Still largely am. It's fucking... It's a hard categorization to nail down. But point is, Smash is a really good album. And I'm not the only one who thought so, because it turns out that fucking thing sold 12 million copies. Like, I don't know if any punk album's ever sold more than that. Green Day's Dookie was like 10 million. And these statistics aren't up to date. It's probably sold even more by now. Yeah, everybody had it. And everybody loved it. And they'd been around a lot longer than I knew. Turns out that it was like their... I knew it was their second album. There was one called Ignition, but there were like one or two more before that. They'd been around for like almost 10 years before Smash finally hit big. And it wasn't even on a major label. It was on like fucking Epitaph. Sold all those copies. But yeah, it was good. Very good album. And then I fell right the fuck off instantly, just like everyone else. The next one sold like 2 million. Should be great for anyone else, but after 12 million, that's a fucking drop. But I just knew right away things were different. Like, they were advertising it on TV, and it was called Ixnay on the Ombre. What the fuck does that even mean? That's not even proper Pig Latin. That's just a fucking stupid title. So I fell completely off the wagon. And then they hit with Pretty Fly for a fucking White Guy. And I was certainly not getting back on the wagon at that point. But going back to Smash, man, there was some good fucking shit on that album. So let's play some Offspring. And then I'll continue to pontificate.
Enjoyed our time together today. You know, it seems harder and harder to just sit back and enjoy the finer things in life. Well, till next time. Ta-ta. We'll be right back.
right? I bet anyone else who hasn't listened to The Offspring since, like, 1994 thought that was fucking cool, because I know I did. See, it turns out there was, like, the Pretty Fly for a White Guy album was obviously just fucking horseshit. But there was one more album in between there, the Extend the Ombre one, where it seemed like The Offspring maybe was still decent. I never listened to it back in the day, so I went and tracked it down. And it's not bad, you know, it's got some alright stuff. What's that really? There's this one really melodramatic song on it about wanting to trade your life for your dead loved one, which is actually a really good song. But that's the song that stuck out for me, Change the World, because it's that little guitar bit from the very end of Smash. They fucking worked it into a whole song. So that would have been like a nice surprise for me in 1995 or 6 if I actually listened to the album. But I didn't, so I just found that out now. But isn't that neat? You know, it's like I was listening to the album, I was like, yeah, this is alright. This could be worse. And then they hit you with that, and it's like, ah, cool, man. You're reminding me of that other album you had that was, like, way better. Nice little touch. But I thought that song Smash was, like, funny to play, because not only is it awesome. My favorite song was always the very first song, Nitro, Youth Energy, but now that all these years have passed, it doesn't get me as much, so I didn't play that one. But Smash, that chorus, I'm not a trendy asshole. If I just wanted to be a real sarcastic dick, I could be like, yeah, well, you're gonna be soon, Pretty Fly for a White Guy, so don't get too comfortable. So you're not that fucking great. You're gonna be a fucking sad sack pop band before too long. But the reality of that fucking Pretty Fly for a White Guy song is kind of like, it's different. It's because it's like, The Offspring was more or less written off. Like, they were still selling 2 million albums, but for them, it was like, they're done. You know, everyone was like, The Offspring's over. We are done with them. And then when that single first fucking showed up, I mean, nobody predicted anything, but they were being super done. I mean, it's so dumb. It's got the Def Leppard thing at the start and the fucking Latina bitches chanting their stupid shit. It's just like the worst goddamn song ever. Weird Al did a parody of it, and it's like, he didn't have to fucking change much. I always thought Dexter Holland kind of sounded like Weird Al, in a way. I remember actually, yeah, after, because, you know, Smash just seemed like it was just our little thing that me and Tim listened to. We didn't realize it was a 12 million seller. And when I saw the Keep 'Em Separated video on Much Music, I was kind of disappointed. I was like, oh man, that's what these guys look like? They look kind of lame. But, yeah, so it's easy in hindsight to be like, Pretty Fly for a White Guy, what a cash grab, what a fucking ridiculous pop song. But honestly, it took some balls, man. It took some balls to even make that shit. To even try with that song. That song was so terrible seeming, you know? Just that. And yet it worked. It worked if you want to sell a bunch of albums. It didn't work if you want to be a fucking good band. So anyway, The Offspring, Smash, I don't know. If you've never heard that album, it's worth giving a listen to. It's really good. Genocide is also a really good song. Why don't I play that? Let's play Genocide from Smash by The Offspring. within literally like three blocks. This was like one per block. I saw just like this little kid, like 4 or 5 years old, just seemingly wandering around by herself next to like a highway. But then I saw half a block down the street, this kid's mom was like trying to sell bottles of water to cars going by. And I kind of wonder about that. I like wonder where she got the water from. How is this worth it? How is this worth the time? How is this profitable? It really wouldn't be so hard to just pull in spring bottles everywhere in this town, because the tap water is all fucking fucked up and it looks like fizzy when you first pour it. It's got to settle down. I still drink it, but maybe I shouldn't. I don't know, how hard would it be to just get a bunch of those bottles, rinse them out, just fill them with tap water. And then if you bought the bottle off the lady, you probably wouldn't notice, so you're a little ways down the street and you turn the cap that it doesn't make that cracking sound, that it's already been opened. Maybe they don't do that, maybe that's just super disgusting, but it's the only way I could see this being cost effective. So then on the next block, there's a dude passed out under an overpass, just laying on his jacket on the sidewalk, just sleeping away. And then the very next block after that was this really chubby family of Asians, a dad, a mom, and a kid, just hanging out on the sidewalk in front of their house, I guess. A little fat kid playing his Nintendo DS. Like, they were really fat, really short and fat. Where's Norman Rockwell now, you know? Fuck. Let's check out this fucking mosaic of humanity. Greatest city in the world, motherfuckers. Alright, so while I was researching old balls music, found out that Dave Grohl, way back when he was still in Nirvana, did some demos. He called them Pocket Watch. And I really liked the first Foo Fighters album, the one he did all by himself. Wasn't exactly breaking new ground, but it was really solid. And then I kind of fell off on the Foo Fighters. Color and the Shape, like, it's not that bad album. It's got some good stuff, but it's just got the worst singles, man. Monkey Wrench, My Hero, I fucking can't stand those songs. They're so fucking boring. Just pick the worst singles ever. But yeah, that first Foo Fighters, I liked it a lot. Tons of good stuff on there. So I thought I'd go check out these demos, because none of them actually got released. Oh shit, I've been here before. Which fucking subway stop is this? Jamaica Van Wyck subway station. Yeah, I remember I had to fucking walk home from here once. I eventually made it. I got a little lost though. It's because there was like a shuttle bus, because the JMZ was closed down. This is where they dropped me. And I was like, well, I don't know where the fuck I am. But now I should be able to fucking navigate it. No big deal. What was I just saying? Yeah, so I thought I'd check these things out, see what they were like. And there is a song I'm going to play from one. I'll get to that in a minute. But he had this song that is just like a little two-minute instrumental of him just telling a little story while the music plays. And at first I was like, yeah, it's kind of funny. Maybe I'll play that. But I listened to it a couple other times, and it's really not that funny. But it reminded me of fucking songs that have a story. King Missile's Detachable Penis. I can't believe I haven't played this yet. This was like, I mean, this was the King Missile song, and I gotta admit, I was kinda also guilty of really just being into this one song, and I knew like a few other little things. I bought an album, I think. Yeah, I did. It was like a re-release, two other albums together. But I really never got into King Missile. All in all, it was really just this song. I was a one-hit wonder kid, just like everybody else. I read an interview with John Hall, the King Missile guy, where he was saying that after fucking Detachable Penis hit, they would start playing it earlier in their set list, just so all the trendy kids could just hear that shit and then leave, you know, get the fuck out of there, so they could just play for the people that actually gave a fuck. And he said it worked pretty well, because they'd play Detachable Penis and people would leave. Like the mixed blessing of having a single that hits big. I also read a story, one of their albums, Mystical Shit maybe, I don't know, that people were still big into the parental advisory sticker Tipper Gore came up with. So they had to submit a lyric sheet. So they just rewrote the lyric sheet so that it didn't have any swearing and submitted that to the record label. And nobody fucking double-checked. So they didn't have to put on a sticker. So keep that in mind if you're in a band. Give it a shot. What's the worst that's going to happen? I should point out for anybody playing along at home that Jamaica Van Wyck is nowhere fucking near my house. I'm just thinking I can intersect with the bus route from where I am if I can get my bearings. So yeah, this was Detachable Penis was like a huge hit on college radio. They must have played this shit every fucking day. But it was always funny. It still is always funny. It's been 10 goddamn years, 15 years maybe. It's still a great goddamn song. Plus stuff I never realized. This guy obviously lives in the East Village. I didn't know shit about New York before, so I didn't recognize any of the references. St. Mark's Place. I guess the Kiev is an old Polish restaurant that is now closed. I learned that through the magic of Wikipedia. Yeah, there's Kentucky Fried Chicken. I know where I am. Disgusting fucking Kentucky Fried Chicken. So yeah, this is kind of... King Missile did a lot of shit. I mean, tons of weird stuff. But this was kind of their formula, their shtick. Get some catchy song, a little catchy hook, of which this was the catchiest. And then John Hall would just say funny, weird shit. Started off as like a spoken word poet guy. But he thought it'd be too boring for him just to talk, so he got his friends up there to play guitar and sort of built it into a whole band. So here's Detachable Penis. Probably you heard this a zillion billion times. Maybe you haven't. It was a fantastic tune.
I woke up this morning with a bad hangover, and my penis was missing again. This happens all the time. It's detachable. This comes in handy a lot of the time. I can leave it home when I think it's going to get me in trouble, or I can rent it out when I don't need it. But now and then I go to a party, get drunk, and the next morning I can't, for the life of me, remember what I did with it. First I looked around my apartment and I couldn't find it, so I called up the place where the party was. They hadn't seen it either. I asked them to check the medicine cabinet, cause for some reason I leave it there sometimes, but not this time. So I told them if it pops up to let me know. I called a few people who were at the party, but they were no help either. I was starting to get desperate. I really don't like being without my penis for too long. It makes me feel like less of a man, and I really hate having to sit down every time I take a leak. After a few hours of searching the house and calling everyone I could think of, I was starting to get very depressed, so I went to the Kiev and ate breakfast. Then as I walked down 2nd Avenue towards St. Mark's Place, where all those people sell used books and other junk on the street, I saw my penis lying on a blanket next to a broken toaster oven. Some guy was selling it. I had to buy it off him. He wanted 22 bucks, but I talked him down to 17. I took it home, washed it off, and put it back on. I was happy again. Complete. People sometimes tell me I should get it permanently attached, but I don't know. Even though sometimes it's a pain in the ass, I like having a detachable penis.
Speaking of Dave Grohl's old solo shit, the one song I did like happened to be... I mean, Marigold was on there. That was a cool song. But I think every Nirvana nerd is pretty familiar with that one. So the other one was it's like the slow songs were the best ones. The other one is called Friend of a Friend. Supposedly it was about him, early impressions of Kurt and Chris Novoselic when he first met them, joined Nirvana. And it's surprisingly somber considering this was like 1992. Sort of takes on a different vibe now that Kurt is dead. But I'm not going to play the really old version. I got it, but he re-recorded it for one of the later Foo Fighter albums that I wasn't aware of, because the Foo Fighters seemed like they kind of spiraled off into bullshit land and I sort of stopped giving a fuck. But yeah, this is a very pretty little ditty that reminded me of another pretty little ditty. This guy Hayden, who's pretty famous in Canada, but I only really know his first album. And his first album is really good. And he used to do this thing where he just like his voice, he just like yell slash growl like super powerfully, like it hurts your throat just to hear it. I'm sure that's why he stopped doing it. There's no way it could be easy on him. But it was cool. Guy had some fucking punch to him. And this is like it's a really long song. It's called Skates. And it's got a very similar vibe. Sounds very similar to this Foo Fighters song. And I heard it way, way before. But I think technically it came out after, though. But I'm sure neither guy heard each other's songs. Just coincidence that they sound so similar. But on the surface, it's like kind of it's like a goofy kind of song. But it's really kind of creepy, too. It's like, I don't know, this guy's, well, you'll hear it. When you really break it down, if you explained it in a sentence, it would sound dumb. But the way it's presented in this song, it's kind of eerie, man. It's cool. It's a good song. So here's Friend of a Friend and Skates by Dave Grohl and Hayden.
He needs a quiet room with a lock to keep him in. It's just a quiet room. He plays an old guitar with a coin found by the phone. It was his friend's guitar, but he played. Been in love, but he knows just what love is. He says, never mind, and no one speaks. He thinks he drinks too much, 'cause when he tells his two best friends, I think I drink too much. No one speaks. No one speaks. No one speaks. Plays an old guitar with the coin found by the phone. It was his friend's guitar that he played. Speaks when he plays. that mouth and eyes blazed. Eyelids just half raised. Now look at him. He looked at me. He looked so sad. I had to see what did he want. What could
behind our house, the river. it's over, and then I will skate as far as it takes. I will skate as far as it takes. Bring her back.
Hey man, you guys sell skates? Yeah, for sure. What's your size? 10 and a half. I'd like your most expensive pair. Yeah, sure. Oh, you like a pro or something? Nah, see, my wife, she drowned in the lake behind my house, right? But I can't swim, so I can't go get her. But I just figure this winter when it, you know, it's all gonna fucking freeze over, I'll just put on these fucking skates, and I'm gonna skate as long as it takes to bring her back home, man. You know that's crazy. That makes no fucking sense at all. But here's your fucking skates. I got another depressing Hayden song I could play about this mom who fucking strapped her kids into the back of her car and drove them into a lake. Maybe I'll save that one for another time. Let's end with some happy, funny shit. Let's go with some more King Missile. We got the extremely short Cheesecake Truck, which is 1 minute of fucking perfect hilariousness. And then this longer song called Gay Not Gay that explains what is gay and what is not gay. And it's the weirdest thing, where mostly it's just the lyrics of this song that are funny and the music just seems weird and experimental, but I've heard it enough times now that I actually get into the music. I kind of fucking dig it. When the drums kick in, it's good. Good stuff. So here's some King Missile. Skate, motherfucker.
So then I got this idea about driving a cheesecake truck, because I figured at the end of the day, I could take some of the leftover cheesecakes home, and I love cheesecake. So I went to the Cheesecake Company, and they asked me if I could drive a truck, and I said yes, and they said, you're hired. So the next day, I got in the truck with all the cheesecakes, and I drove about a block, and I just had to have a cheesecake. So I pulled over and opened the truck, and I got a cheesecake, and I also took one for later, and I took one for my friend Farm Boy, and I took one to bring home, and by that time, I had eaten one of the cheesecakes, so I took another one. Then I figured I might as well stop at my house to drop off all the cheesecakes. So I take 5 cakes to eat on the way, and I drive another block and a half to my house. Now it's lunchtime, so I ate 10 cheesecakes and a cheesecake for dessert. I should point out, by the way, that all of these cheesecakes were very delicious. Anyway, I decided that the only thing to do would be to eat all the rest of the cheesecakes and hide the truck somewhere and leave town. And I miss everybody a lot, but I'm not really sorry, because they were very delicious cheesecakes. I saw an episode of the Jerry Springer Show, and the topic was transvestites and the men who love them. And the guy was on with his girlfriend, and he was saying, to me, this is a beautiful woman. She's got a perfect body, beautiful blonde hair, everything. I love her, and I love making love to her. Now I ask you, does that make me gay? Most of the audience thought so, and so did I. But it got me thinking about what is and isn't gay. Discussing sex with a guy is gay. Discussing sex with a woman is straight. Even telling a woman, sometimes I wonder what it would be like to suck a cock, is straight. Sports are gay, especially contact sports, unless you're the only guy on both teams, in which case it's straight. Gyms are always gay, because afterwards in the locker room you're showering with guys, and that is gay. Watching pornography alone is neutral, like eating a sandwich. It's neither straight nor gay.
goes with one or more other guys in the room, no matter how many other women are also in the room, is gay. Watching porn, even gay porn, with one or more women only, is straight. Interesting one. Kissing a gay guy on the cheek or letting him kiss you on the cheek is neutral, as long as the guy is out of the closet. Hugging and or kissing a straight guy is gay. See, look, I know I'm homophobic, but not about gay guys. They don't bother me at all. It's straight guys who don't know they're gay. They fuck my shit right up. Like a guy calls me up and says, a bunch of us guys are gonna sit around in our underwear and watch the football game and drink beer and eat chips and, you know, maybe wrestle with each other a little. You know, just us guys. You wanna come over? And I'm like, no. Got the best breast implants you've ever seen. Even if you're saying to him, suck it, bitch, I know you like it, you slut, you whore. That's gay. Conversely, if a woman straps on a dildo and you're dressed like a woman and you're sucking her cock and she's saying, you like it, don't you? You like sucking my dick, you little fucking faggot. And then she rolls you over and fucks you in the ass and says, you love it, you little pussy boy. You love getting fucked in the ass. I'll bet you wish I was a man. I'll bet you wish I was a real cop. You fucking faggot. And you're getting off on this like you've never gotten off before. That's still straight. But then, when you go off to the bar and discuss this or any other sexual experience with other guys, that's gay. Forum all the time, and you lose, and the woman makes you have sex with another guy. That's not gay. I don't know exactly why, but it's not.
Here's a last second addition. I started listening to old Filter stuff, if you remember that band. It's Richard Patrick, who was a Nine Inch Nails touring guitarist, and they put out their first album early, mid-90s. I remember my friend Tim, the same guy who turned me on to The Offspring. He had that record, probably. Eric sold it to him also. And the first one wasn't bad. It had some stuff, but it was a little too harsh, I thought. But their second album, Title of Record, they really kind of smoothed it out, and you know, it's more pop-like, softer, but not soft. I don't know. It was a really good album. My friend Matt bought that one and was like, dude, you got to hear this. This is a fucking seriously good album. And he's right. Like, I'm listening to it again, and it is fucking solid as shit. Like, there's a couple of songs maybe that drag a little bit. But overall, like, filter, title of record, I give it 10 thumbs up. It's worth a listen if you haven't heard it. But why I'm going to play this is, listening through it, I forgot about this one song called... What's it called? It's Gonna Kill Me? Is that it? Yeah, that's the one. Where just the bass sound from the start. I stole that bass sound back in the day when I used to do music a lot on computer with trackers and stuff. I sampled it, as they say. And it was like one of my favorite little bass sounds to swipe. So after I play that, I'm gonna play an old instrumental I have, just called Wrangle One, because my friend Mark's name in our band, Tragically Hip Hop, was Wrangle. And we never did anything with this. It kind of jumps. It's got like a cool, like, sort of hip hop bass line that I stole the bass sample from this filter song. And then it breaks into like a punk thing and then into like a metal thing. And there's supposed to be this jokey song we're going to do about how he, I don't know how, it was like, he was like a metal dude, but he was getting into hip-hop, and then we catch him and make fun of him. I don't know. We never finished doing it anyway. It's just the instrumental. But as soon as I heard that bass sound, I was like, oh, shit, that's the one that I fucking totally stole for my instrumental. So here's some filter, and then we'll wrap everything up with some classic, a classic Tragically Hip-Hop instrumental.